So we're going to start a new series tonight called Falling Short, and we're going to be in Romans if you guys want to get your Bibles open there. But it is awesome. Like, how many of you guys, now that school's done, you have a trip planned? Any, like, sweet trips coming up this summer? A few of you? Anybody going camping somewhere? Hopefully up north, because it's way too hot right now in Florida. So when I was younger, like, dude, the second summer came, my family would grab us, throw us in the car, and we'd take off, and we would go somewhere nice and cool, like up in New England, and we would just, like, camp and have this awesome time. And this one year we went to New Hampshire and we were so excited because they had this beautiful river that we could camp right alongside this nice campground. And we had one of those pop-up campers. Anybody know what a pop-up camper is? They ever seen one of those? It looks like a big, like a Big Mac box, you know, like from McDonald's. It just looks like a hamburger box. And it has this like crank on the side. And as you like crank it, at least it did back in the day, like 1,000 years ago when I was a kid. And so like you could crank this. And as you cranked it, the top comes up and the walls are basically just made of like cloth. It was real classy. So that's what we had. Like we stayed in this camper and we were like right by this river. It was beautiful. And so our whole plan was my mom was going to drive me, my dad and my sister upriver, and we were going to get these canoes and canoe back down the river to our campsite because we were right on like the edge of the river. So she drives us up there. We had this big German shepherd, so we had to like leave him, lock him up in the pop-up camper so he could stay behind. And she drives us up and she drops us off. Well, we're up there doing our thing, having fun. Mom comes back and she pulls into the campsite. And she gets out, and the second she gets out of the car, she hears from inside the camper, because remember the walls are super thin. They're made of like cloth, basically. And so she hears the dog in there, and he hears her. So he's going, woof, woof, you know, like protecting the camper. But his barking sounded strange. It was like, woof, woof, yeah, yeah. It's like one of those. It's just like, what? Woof, woof, yeah, yeah. It's just like, and this dog is like, she knows the second she hears it, he's barfing all over the inside of this camper. Like there's going to be vomit, dog vomit on everything. So she starts freaking out. So she runs up to the camper and she's like, I got to get in. And the second she grabs the door, she's like, it's locked. And she goes for the keys. And she's like, man, I don't have the keys. So she runs back to the car and there they are in the seat. And she goes to open the car and it was locked. She had locked herself out. So now like, camper's locked, car's locked, keys are in there, and the dog's still going, ah, ah, inside. And she's like, my mom is a neat freak. Like, this is driving her insane thinking about what's happening to the inside of the camper, right? This big German shepherd has a lot of vomit to, like, come out. So she grabs this stick, right? She's got this genius idea. These, like, old pop-up campers, because it's cloth, have these little spots where it's Velcro. I know, so safe, right? And so you can like open up these little holes for some reason. I don't even know why they exist, but they were always there. And so she opened up the little hole and she gets this big stick from the woods and she starts sticking in there hoping that she can like get around and somehow unlock the door with this stick. Well, the dog sees that and goes crazy. He thinks it's like someone robbing the camper. So he's like throwing up, trying to attack her. She's got the stick. She's hanging in the camper and all of a sudden it starts raining. Literally, my mom was so, if you know my mom, listen, if you know Linda, you know how unhappy Linda was, all right? If you don't know Linda, go to the cafe one night and you'll meet Linda and you'll understand what I'm saying, right? So Linda was not happy and it starts raining on her and she's trying to break in the camper and all of a sudden on the side of the camper, she sees a reflection of like red and blue and she's like, what? That's weird. And she hears, and she turns around and the police had pulled in. Someone that was also camping there called on her, thought she was trying to break into the camper in the rain with the dog throwing up all over her. It was like the worst day of Linda's life, right? It was terrible. So I remember when we finally got it situated and got back in the vomit that was everywhere. And Linda was not a happy camper that day. And so as she's like trying to get into the camper, there was one thing on her mind, that key that was sitting in the car, right? Like, I have to get into this car. And the one thing that I need is the only thing I can think about. And at all costs, I'm going to get that key, right? Like, that was the big deal. And it's funny because as we go through things in life, sometimes we aren't aware of the things that we need, right? That was so clear to her. Like, obviously, this dog's throwing up. I have a problem. This is my need. This is how it gets fixed. But it's not always that clear, you know? Sometimes as we go through things in everyday life and we have situations or problems or just things going on, what we actually need doesn't seem so clear. And sometimes it might even be clear, but we just choose to kind of ignore it and think, no, I can do this thing on my own. I don't need anything. Because listen, let's face it, as humans, we usually don't like to admit that we need anything. because that makes us feel weak. And we don't want to have to tell anybody that we need help. And so the fact that we might have a need is something we want to hide or push aside, right? And a day like my mom had, there was no hiding that. Like, that was so clearly just, it was what it was. But what about the moments when it's not that clear? What about the moments in your life where you're like, man, I'm not sure in this moment if I can handle this thing or I can face this problem that's on the horizon? And even more so, what about your own soul? Like your own salvation? When you're talking about your relationship with God, do you know what you need? Are you aware that we're all born with a need that is the same one every single one of us has? Because a lot of times, not just as humans, but also like in our culture as Americans, we don't like to even see that we have a need. And I got this. I live in a nice house. I have a family. I have this stuff going on for me. And because where I live and the culture I'm in, like, I don't admit that I'm a broken person. Like, how dare you tell me that I'm broken and have a need? How dare you tell me that I'm imperfect? How dare you call me a sinner? See, we live in this culture where it's almost like it's so rude to even imply that any of us have a need of anything. We want to be so tolerant and careful with that, that we find ourselves not even talking about this need that is right in front of us. Like, it's so clear. But we don't even want to broach the subject with each other because we're afraid it might offend somebody, and it's not tolerant to say that you and I are broken. But listen, I'm not here tonight to offend you, but you and I are broken. And you and I have a need that we need to be able to say, like, I acknowledge it, I see it, and if I don't ever see it, then I'll never address it. So if we never talk about it, we'll just live with this huge need, like this thing hanging around our backs that's weighing us down that we never want to look at or address or realize is there, right? And we'll just go our whole lives doing that. And so we have to stop and admit, hey, listen, I am a person who is in need, who's broken, I'm a sinner, I'm not right with God. And until I can stop and actually admit those things and stop being offended by them being true and just say, that's my life, that's who all of us are, that's how we're born, then we'll never actually address it. And so tonight, I want you to open up to Romans chapter 1. We're just going to look at verses 18 to 25 together. Let's read in verse 18, it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God's shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived, and ever since the creation of the world, in the things that have been made. So they're without excuse. For although they know God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." So Paul is talking here to the Romans, and he starts off by pointing out this big need that all of us have. He's like, hey, if we're going to talk about hope, we have to see that we have a need first, because what do you need hope for if there's no need in your life? And so he wants to be very clear and very direct about this thing that all of us share in common. And listen how he starts. He says, "For the wrath of God." Like, that's usually not the way you want to start, right? It doesn't sound super like hopeful and motivating. It's like, yeah, let's get jazzed. It's like the wrath of God. Dum, dum, dum. You know, no one wants to start that way, but it's true. It's true. And if we skip over the fact that there is this thing that is called wrath that none of us want to have to bear, that the God of creation holds in store for those that will be punished, like, we'll never see that we need help if we don't believe that that's real. This wrath of God actually exists. Sometimes we want to just kind of water all of like Christianity down to this, let's just be nice to each other and smile and pat each other on the back and just be happy all the time and sing songs and we'll be good. Let's ignore sin. Let's ignore brokenness. Let's not talk when we're like sad. Let's not tell people that because it's kind of a downer. Like we don't want to talk about those things sometimes, but here's the reality is that the power of this thing is the fact that God can transform our lives. He takes broken people that are under wrath and he frees them and transforms them. And that's beautiful, but we'll never get there if we don't start off talking about this wrath that God has in store. It says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven, right? This God who is just, meaning like he's fair, and he has to like respond with fairness and justice to what's happening because it's simply who he is. He can't just ignore injustice. And listen, you wouldn't want him to ignore injustice. It's only when we're like the ones that are guilty that we just want to be like, God, just chill. Like, you don't need to be just right now. But when someone has offended us or done something to us, we're like, God, get them. Like, get justice. Like, we're all about justice, right? But see, the thing with God is he doesn't change like that based on emotion. God simply is because who he is. He is a just and fair and righteous God all the time. And so when he sees sin and injustice, when he looks down at the disgusting things that are happening on earth and in our lives, when he sees how horrible people treat each other, when he sees how you have been hurt at various times in your life, he feels that and he hates injustice. And he responds to it, right? And so this wrath of God is revealed from heaven. It says, against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. God is coming after sin. God is going to tackle sin. God is going to punish and bring justice on sin. That's just who he is. It says, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. This kind of tells us now about who we are. If God is so just and righteous, look at what it says about man. He says, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. So we're not only unrighteous, but we want to pretend we are. We want to suppress the truth and be like, no, we're actually good, God. Like, don't even worry about what's happening down here. You don't need to look at my sin. You don't need to change me or like, we're good. We want to even convince ourselves maybe that like, we're actually good. Don't talk to me about sin, bro. Like, that's messed up. Don't tell me I'm broken, bro. Like, that's not good for my mental health. Like, we're all about this thing. Like, just don't broach the subject that I might actually have a need in my life. It's none of your business. And we'll go so far to say, God, it's none of your business. It's like, leave me alone. Don't call me a sinner. Don't tell me I have a need. Don't call me broken. We will literally try to suppress the truth because he is perfectly righteous and we are so unrighteous. And we're born that way. You were born with sin already as a part of who you are. You inherited it. You were born broken from the moment you took your first breath. And then it's not said to be like, hey man, you're terrible. That's said to be like, there's an awesome God who loves you and wants to fix that. There's an awesome God who's willing to send his only son to fix that, to change you, to give you what you need the most. This is a love story. This isn't a tragedy. God has sent Jesus for you and for me. But we go along and we want to suppress that truth. We want to be blind to it and not look at it and ignore it. Look what it says in verse 19. It says, for what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. You know that God literally has shown us enough so that we can just look around us and see his signature everywhere. Like God's fingerprints are on everything. You have God's fingerprints all over you. Your DNA, the fact that you're breathing, the design of your body, the fact that you exist right now and just aren't like disappearing is literal proof that there is a power. God, who is holding you together, His power is everywhere. And what he's saying here is like these people who are like living in unrighteousness, like human beings that are so broken and unjust, they're trying to just be blind to it, but it's plain to see. They're having to work really hard to convince themselves it's not true because it's so plain and so apparent and it's everywhere. Just look around you. You're going to see God's fingerprints on all of creation, including on yourself. Your very existence screams out, God, you exist. God, you're real. God, you made me. Or else I wouldn't even be here right now. This infinite God can be known. And it says, because he's shown it to them, God did it that way on purpose. He wants you to know that he exists. God is literally chasing you down. Tonight, he's like wanting you to know, hey, I exist. I'm here. I made you. I'm holding you together. I have a plan for your future. And I love you so much. I sent my only son to die for you, to forgive your sin, to fix your brokenness, to make you right with your God and your creator. God says, I want you to know this. I've shown it to you. I've made it plain and clear so that even in your unrighteousness, you can see with your own eyes, here I am. I'm right here and I love you. Will you just open up your eyes and see me? But this need that we have of a savior, we want to be blind to it so often. I want to push it under the rug and pretend it doesn't exist. And it's funny. There's a quote you've probably heard, a saying that's used. It says, you don't appreciate what you have until you lose it. You ever heard that before? You don't appreciate what you have until you lose it. It seems like all the things in our lives, like we don't realize how important they are sometimes until you really, really need them. You know, if you've ever had really chapped lips before and reached in your pocket for a stick of chapstick and there was none, you know what I'm talking about, how important chapstick is, because your lips feel like they're going to crack and bleed and just break off. And you will do anything for that one Burt's Bees chapstick, which is the best, by the way. You shouldn't use anything else. Just Burt's Bees works, right? Chapstick's so important in that moment. You're like, I'm so aware of my need right now because I don't have the thing, right? That's when we become aware of it in that moment. How about when you've had like a really bad headache and you've just needed like an Advil or something in that moment because your head is just throbbing and reminding you. Otherwise, you wouldn't probably care or think about it until the moment arrives. I was on a trip once and I was in an airport in Germany and I had never realized like how different Germany and their culture was from our culture until I was in this airport. And so I'm going through the airport. We're all chilling and I'm with some other people and I have to go to the bathroom. So I run to the bathroom. And as I get in there, I quickly realize this is strange because like something's off here. What's going on in the bathroom? And I realize, oh, wait, it's because there are men and women in this bathroom. Like it was, okay, I'm not used to seeing that. It's a co-ed bathroom and that's really weird, but okay. So like I have to go to the bathroom. So I use the restroom, right? And I'm standing there using the restroom and there's this like mirror above me, which was kind of weird too. And I was like, I don't want a mirror there. And all of a sudden this hand like comes by my head and I'm like, oh, okay, that's happening. And it has a spray bottle in it. And I'm like, what is going on right now? Like, and it like sprays the mirror in front of my face, like right over the reflection of my face. And I'm like, I don't want to turn. Like, I don't want to look. I don't want to know. I just want to leave. And I do. I'm like, okay, I got to check this out because this could be my life in my hands right now. So I turn and it is the sweetest little old lady. She was so wrinkled and like she's this little German lady and it was just clueless. Like she didn't, nothing bothered her in this moment that I'm standing there using the restroom and she is an inch away from me cleaning the mirror in front of me. And I'm just like, why God have you done this to me? Like, Lord. And so I finish as quickly as I can and I try to get out of the bathroom and I just run. And you know, we're chilling and our flight gets delayed and we're there for a while and I have to go to the bathroom again. I'm like, no, God, no. Why? I've tried not to drink anything or eat anything. I'm like, I never want to go to that bathroom ever again. And I have to, or there's going to be a problem, right? So I go back begrudgingly to the bathroom. I drag myself in. And this time I need to go in the stall. TMI, I know it's too much information, but I don't want to ever go where I was before. So I'm going to close the door and lock it and be safe on my own in this stall. And so, like, I do my thing, right? Like, you do your thing when you need to go to the bathroom. And so when I'm done, I realize something's different about this stall. And I'm looking. And I'm looking. And there's nothing. I'm like, there's not even a place to put toilet paper. Never mind the fact that there is no toilet paper. Like, they just don't provide toilet paper in this stall? Like, why? This is so un-American. I'm like, I'm in Germany. That's why. And so I realized this could be a very, very problematic moment in my life. I need toilet paper so badly right now, or I'm going to be so embarrassed. So needless to say, I had to buy a new pair of socks that day. Because listen, like, you do what you got to do when you got to do it is all I'm saying. Okay. There was no other option, but I got some cool German socks. They were nice. They were real nice. Blue with some pinstripes. They were awesome. So I'm just saying, listen, it's in the moments where you don't have a thing, in the heat of the moment sometimes, where you finally realize your need. But I think if we were to be honest about that statement, what we would say is it's when we're finally in a place where we realize we have no choice but to admit our need. It's almost like sometimes God has to pin us down into a point where there's no other option but to look up and realize who we actually are. Has God ever had to wrestle you to the ground and be like, yo, wake up? Would you just see where you're actually at right now? Would you look into your heart and see what you're actually feeling in your mind? See what you're actually thinking right now? Because you don't want to admit it. And sometimes God has to wrestle me literally to the ground and give me no other option for me to see this gaping need that I have in my life. I'm too busy telling him, God, I got this. I can do this on my own. And he's like, no, you can't. Will you just see how much you need me? And listen, when we're talking about your salvation, your eternal future, that's not the moment you want to gamble. That's the moment where he says, Jesus showed up just for this reason, because you can't save yourself. You can't forgive your own sin. You can't fix your relationship with God. It's broken. Maybe some of us need God to pin us down and say, look, there's no other option, but Jesus, when will you surrender and say, Jesus, I'm yours. Jesus, I need you. I can't fix myself. I need what you did on the cross to fix me. And to make me whole and make me right with God again. I love that hymn, that old song, Amazing Grace, right? Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. Why is it so sweet? Because it saved a wretch like me. I once was lost. Now I'm found. I was blind. But now I see. That whole song about grace that's so amazing is about this massive need of blindness and lostness. Because we can recognize we're blind and recognize we're lost and admit our need and brokenness, that's when we're finally ready. Ready to take that step over and say, Jesus, I give up. I can't do this. I need you. I just wonder tonight how many of us are here and we're like, man, I don't need Jesus. You can keep Jesus, Rob. All this talk about a savior and religion, the Bible, keep it. I'm good. But until you realize how much you really do need Jesus, you can never be repaired. You can never be forgiven. You can never be made right with the one who loves you so much he's willing to die for you. You got to be willing to take that step to say, I give up. I see the need, and Jesus, it's you. You're who I need in my life. God has done that for us. He's literally chasing us down to show us that. Tonight's an example. The fact that you're sitting here, you think this is some just coincidence that you're here tonight hearing this very message? Every time we open up God's word, he has a purpose for it. He's planned it out for your ears to hear the sounds and these words and this message because he's speaking to you tonight. He's speaking to me tonight from this. This is God's voice to us. What do you think he's trying to tell you tonight? Why do you think he brought you here? Maybe it's to show you that you have a need that only he can fill. Oh man, I hope you listen to him. I hope you hear him and I hope you respond to it and don't just let it fall to the wayside. Look what he says next in verse 20. He says, this is so beautiful because he describes God. He says, for his invisible attributes, you know, God's invisible. No one's like laid eyes on God. It says, namely, his eternal power and divine nature, means he's God, right? Have been clearly perceived, seen ever since the creation of the world. Since day one, when God said, let there be light, right? When God started creation, from that moment, it's always been visible. Even though he's an invisible God, because he's too big to ever be seen. He's too limitless and boundless for eyes to be able to capture who he is. You could never see him. He's that massive and powerful. You're able to perceive him. You could tell he's there. There's a reason why every culture on earth from the beginning of time has had some form of God that they've known is there, right? Like, there's this thing in us that says God is, he exists. It's logical. It makes sense. But more so, I feel it within me. There is this thing that God has put in us that as human beings, we can't deny it. Even the most stark atheists, they would not want to admit it. I guarantee you in their hearts, they're going, yeah, I know deep inside me. I don't want to believe it, but how could there not be a God? And that's what Paul's saying here is like, it's just absolutely perceivable everywhere you look. His massive power to build a universe that seems almost endless, right? It's so massive and huge and powerful. God has been behind this and he's been chasing you down. As small as you are compared to the universe, he's thinking about you specifically today. And it was ever since the creation of the world. This has always been the plan. It wasn't like last minute, like, oh, I better tell them who I am. Like, God has always been like, I'm going to show these people. They're going to see my glory. I am going to shout it through everything I create that I love them. It says, in the things that have been made. And guess what? You were made. You are one of those things that was made. You are evidence of God. I love it when you're talking to people who are like atheists or scientific in a way. They don't believe in the Bible or God. And you're having this conversation where they don't want to like ever admit that there could be a God or even the possibility of. And as you're talking, you're like hearing what they say and hearing their evidence and how there's no evidence for God and no evidence of the Bible. And you're looking at them and you're like, your body is literally the evidence. You can't get any closer to it. You are the evidence, bro. Like, look at yourself. You're breathing. You have a soul and a spirit and life. Where else in the universe do we see it? Even today with our best telescopes, we can't find it. And here we are, evidence of this incredible God whose fingerprints and signature are all over you. And you get to be that. He's honored you with that. To be able to be the thing that is pointing at God going, he exists, look at me. Because I exist, it's evidence that he has done this incredible thing. And he says this next, he says, so they are without excuse. So it leaves all people and all time, anyone who's ever lived, without an excuse. They can't say God doesn't exist, or I didn't see him, or I didn't realize. You always ask that question, right? Like, especially like when we're talking about missions, we're like, what about that little tribe in the middle of Africa, in the middle of nowhere, that no one ever has ever shown up to them and told them the gospel? Like, what happens to them? Like, they didn't hear it. What do they know? This verse answers that. There is enough to literally look around you and say, God exists, and it leaves them without excuse. It's enough to say that you are not, like, you're not excused from this, from acknowledging his existence and seeking him out. And that's why missionaries are so important, because God then sends us to the world to tell these people who are left without excuse who this awesome God is that they recognize all around them. God's calling the church to be loud and bold and to go, because everyone has need. And listen, you'll never go until you realize your own need, until you deal with it, until you stand before God and say, I give up. Like, I need you, Jesus. I need you to fix this. Maybe some of you guys have done that, and you're at the point where you're like, now send me. Send me to the world. Send me to the edges and the borders of the world, and let me go tell people how awesome you are. Let me tell them what they need, that it's Jesus. In verse 21, it says, for although they knew, they didn't honor him as God or give thanks to him. So, like, these people knew him. They could see clearly he exists, but they didn't care. They didn't want to honor him or respect him as God. Does that sound familiar at all to our culture today? It's clear he's there, but you know what? And I'm not just talking about, like, people that don't go to church. I'm talking about people that do. How many of us want to go to church so we feel good and feel better about ourselves? We hear this motivational speaker that helps us, like, feel better and laugh and, like, have hope. And then we, like, sing these awesome songs and we leave and we've been encouraged and hugged. And then we go and we live a life that looks nothing like Jesus. I know he exists because I go hear about him in church every Wednesday, every Sunday. And then I get on social media and, like, the most grotesque, God-dishonoring things I could ever, like and share. And I could go and I can go with my friends to places I shouldn't be and with my girlfriend and boyfriend or do the things I know that dishonor God. And I could just, right? And we're leaving and we're doing these things that have nothing. And it's almost like we're going, God, I'm just going to pretend you're not here now. I know you are, you know, but like only during church. Because I still want to live out my flesh and I want to do the things that make me feel good and I don't want to miss out on those things. So God, you stay in your box at church. That's where you belong, but don't follow me into my life because I don't want you there. Like I want to be able to do what I want to do. And look what it says. It says, but they became futile. That means foolish. Like they became really dumb in their thinking because they convinced themselves of the lie that they don't need him. And when you think you don't need God, it says, in their foolish hearts were darkened. You start to believe the lie, and then your heart really, really takes it in, and you live it. Your heart gets darkened, and you actually live through that filter like, God, I don't need you. God, I'm good. God, you stay out there. I'm going to keep living in the flesh and doing my thing. It says, claiming to be wise, they became fools. They thought they were so smart. Like, I got this figured out. I know how to do this thing. I don't need God. And literally just talked themselves into garbage, doing things that had no value, holding and clinging to things that were literal trash that they thought were trophies, and they were pointless. And listen to what it says next, and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and creeping things. You're standing in front of the most powerful being in all of creation. You're beholding his glory. You're just in his presence and you feel so small. And you go, hey, listen, guess what? I'd rather actually trade that for these sticks and stones that I've carved out. And I'd rather worship these things that can't speak back to me, can't move, can't breathe, can't think, because they won't tell me what to do. I can control these gods, and I can't control him. And so they exchange the truth for a lie, something that can transform them someone that loves them for just a bunch of junk and lies. And you're like, man, we're not some like native tribe in the jungle that worships like stones and sticks, Rob. What are you even talking about? True, but like how many idols do you have in your life that you worship instead of Jesus? How many things in your life are you exchanging for the glory of God? How many of you are saying, man, listen, like, those friends and what they think about me are so important. I'll do anything, literally anything, to get their approval. That boy or girl that, like, I really like, you know, they're so cute, and, like, I'll do anything for them to like me. I need to get good grades and get in a good college, and I need to just focus on my GPA and all these things and my future, and like, God, there's just not even time. I'll exchange whatever, even you, so that I can accomplish these goals. I gotta have money, I gotta look good, I gotta feel good, I gotta have be like a super fit and in shape. Like, put the list, put it on your list, right? There are so many things, y'all, if we're honest, that we're worshiping. And we know we're worshiping them because they become more important than God in our lives. We're telling God we don't have time for him because we got to do this thing. Or God, I know this dishonors you, so you stay there. I'm trading this in for you. I'd rather have this. I like the way this makes me feel. That's worshiping it. That's telling God this means more to me than you do. We are exchanging this eternal God for a bunch of junk that won't last. You don't want to live your life that way. You don't want to make that trade. You will regret it. Because there is nothing that compares to your Creator. There's nothing that compares to your Savior that loves you enough to die for you. And you're like, but that's so far away. It's now. It's here. He's in this room. He wants to literally abide in you and live in you and do life with you. It's you that's blinding yourself with lies, not seeing your need, if you're willing to say, it's just not for me right now. That's just lying to yourself. Because you need Jesus. And I'm not afraid to tell you that tonight. Verse 24 says this, and we'll close with these verses here. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts, to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie, worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who's blessed forever. Amen. When you do it long enough, when you exchange long enough, and you lie to yourself long enough, and you tell God to go away long enough, it says, what he does here is that he lets you. He doesn't force you. He gave them up to impurity. Their hearts wanted impurity. Their hearts wanted sin and flesh and brokenness. Their hearts didn't want anything to do with their Creator. And so God eventually gives them up to those things and lets them do it because they've exchanged the truth about him for a lie. They've worshiped. Listen to what they worship. They worship the creature rather than the Creator. The one who made everything. The one with enough power to design all the things that we can be so captivated by and think are so beautiful and wonderful. The things that we crave and want were made by someone even better than them. But we're hung up on those things instead of on what's way better. The one who made them. The one who will blow your mind if you'll take the time to sit at his feet and say, teach me who you are. Blow my mind. Show me who you are. Talk to me. Flex your muscles. Whatever you want to do, God, but show me that you are who you say you are. Instead of going, hey, I'd rather just you go that way. Let me just chill here with this stuff you made because it's really, really cool. This stuff that will break and fade and not last. Let me be with that and trade that in for an eternal God who wants to blow my mind for the rest of eternity. Because he loves you that much. It says he is blessed forever and ever. Amen. When I graduated college, I was going to go on this mission trip. And so I stayed on campus. I went to Liberty, and so I was up in a dorm, and I stayed on campus until this mission trip that was going to be like weeks after I was out. And so I just had nothing to do. I was just chilling on campus, but I was trying to like get all these last minute things done that I had to worry about. And I was working so hard to like accomplish all these things. Man, I just had my list of things I had to get done and I had to do. It was stressing me out. Like I was under all sorts of anxiety and I was just like, man, how am I ever going to accomplish it? I was making myself sick. I don't know if you can relate to that sometimes in school, but like I'm literally making myself sick to get this stuff done so I didn't feel like a failure, you know, like I wanted to accomplish it. And so I had these couple weeks to try to do that. And in the middle of it, I remember just feeling just terrible. And all just wrapped up in myself of how things weren't going right and this is wrong and oh, woe is me and all my problems. And I'm just like in the middle of all this and I get a phone call from a friend of mine who had also done the same thing, going on the same trip. And she was across campus staying in her dorm trying to get things done. And she's like, man, can we meet? I really need to talk. And I was like, yeah, you know, I don't really have time. You know, I got all this stuff to do, but sure, I'll make a few minutes. And so I go meet up with her and we sit down. And the second, like I walk in this little coffee shop, she's sitting there, I can see her eyes. And they're just bright red. And you could tell she'd been crying and she just looked like so sad. I'm like, oh no, you know? And so I go and I sit down at the table with her and I'm like, what is wrong? And here I am feeling terrible about myself over grades in school and like these really kind of dumb things now that I look back at it. And she's like, I just got a call from my mom that my dad just passed away. And as I'm sitting here at the table thinking like, what? Here I am like being so stupid, convincing myself that all of these things mattered that just didn't matter and forgetting the big picture, right? I'm losing focus on the things that really matter. Here, look at what this girl's going through. And as I think about my relationship with Jesus and your relationship with Jesus, how often are we doing that? We're blinded by the little things and we don't see the really huge, important thing right in front of our eyes. You need Jesus. And not just once for him to save you, but forever, every single second of every single day, we need Jesus. That's why he promises to abide in us. And I would just ask you tonight, would you be willing to just recognize your need? If you're not ready to take any other step beyond that tonight, fine. But will you take that one? Will you stand before God tonight and say, I recognize, I need you? The band's going to come up and lead us in some more worship. And as they do, as they're making their way up here, will you just do this? Will you close your eyes for a second? And will you just say, God, will you show me if I need you tonight? Will you make me aware of my need? If I think I'm good, if I think I'm all like perfect and my life's great, will you convince me otherwise? Will you show me the spots that I need to give up to you?